So I went to my first homeschool convention, and let me tell you, it was not what I expected. My mind was blown. Given I have been in education for a very long time, this was the first I had ever heard of different pedagogies, the first I had heard of a term called a living book, all of that. And I came home from that conference and I said, Scott, we're gonna homeschool our kids. When I went down that road, the big driving question I dared to ask myself, which was the beginning of the end, is I started to ask myself, what is an education? And when you honestly ask yourself that question, there is no way you can see that the schools are providing this for our kids.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Zan Tyler podcast, where our goal is to help you thrive in your homeschool journey. Let me take just a minute to ask you to please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen or watch, including YouTube. And if this podcast has been encouraging to you, please leave us a good review. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as well. You are going to love today's guest, Christy Faith. She has worked with every level of education from kindergarten through college, including training teachers, instructing students, and advising families. She co-founded and ran a premier educational center and consulting firm in Los Angeles before experiencing an awakening that sparked her transition to the homeschool arena. She is now the homeschool mother of four and author of the newly released book, Homeschool Rising. So stay tuned. I think you will love this episode.
When my family started our homeschooling journey, there were so many decisions to make. But one of our best decisions was choosing to use BJU Press Homeschool. I've never seen my kids so excited to get textbooks before. I'm amazed by how interesting and interactive the lessons are. My kids actually look forward to them. We use the online video lessons for all our courses, but I know some families choose to teach from the textbooks. What I love is that I can trust BJU Press to uphold our values. The Bible and biblical principles are woven throughout each subject. I'll admit, I was a bit nervous when I started homeschooling, but I've found a wonderful online community of other BJU Press homeschool families and consultants. The Homeschool Hub also makes my job easier. I can set up our schedules and rearrange them with just a few clicks. On the dashboard, I can see each of my kids' progress, and the assignments page shows me quickly what's ready for me to check or grade. I'm glad my son's biology assignments are automatically graded. BJU Press Homeschool has given us the tools and confidence to homeschool our children. For more information, do what I did and visit the BJU Press Homeschool website or talk with your local homeworks consultant.
Well, Christy, it is such a delight to have you on the show with me today. I love, love, love your new book, Homeschool Rising.
Oh my goodness. Thank you. I was scared for you to read it, Zan.
I just kept going, yes, 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 yes.
Fantastic. I know there was a gal in my community on my launch team, and she said something that really warmed my heart. She's like, when I got to chapter 7, I thought to myself, shots fired, because that's my socialization chapter. And that was like, yay.
It is fabulous. And I've read a few homeschool books in my time.
Yes.
So I have a little bit of a platform of comparison there. And I just want to say thank you, because I know it's going to mean so much to so many moms and dads out there. So tell us a little bit about your life growing up in terms of your family, but tell us about your school experience as well.
Yeah, well, growing up, I think the most important part of my story is that people understand that I have one sister. It's the two of us. She is older than me. And by the time she was in kindergarten, she was diagnosed with several learning disabilities, which, as your listeners may know, in the early 1980s, when diagnoses were new, it was hard to get diagnosed at all, but girls were hardly ever diagnosed with anything.
Oh, so, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because the kids that stood out were kind of the hyperactive boys, and they were kind of noticed first and given diagnoses. Well, my sister struggled very much with learning disabilities growing up. And then when I came along, I didn't struggle. I didn't struggle at all. I learned to read just fine. And my parents were fighting the system all the way through her high school graduation. At that time, involved a ton of education along with fighting for her to get accommodations. My parents, looking back, they hadn't even heard of homeschooling back then. My mom says to this day, if she would have known, she would have quit her job. She was a nurse. She would have quit her job and figured out how to homeschool, at least my sister and probably me as well, when stuff with me started to come through. So growing up, because things were such a struggle with my sister, I learned very quickly, and this is no fault of my parents at all, to keep my mouth shut and get good grades, basically, because it was so hard for her. And it was really hard for them. And it was constant therapies, vision, specialists, reading specialists, in and out of doctor's offices, getting diagnosed over and over again every couple of years. But what happened is when I was about in fourth grade, my parents sat me down and they said, you know, we had a parent-teacher conference and your teacher said that you're not living up to your potential. And I said, what? What does that mean? And they're like, well, you're getting C's. And I did not know what grades were. In fourth grade, I did not know what grades were. And I think most kids in America do, but because I was younger than my sister and because they had to minimize grades because my sister struggled so much, it wasn't talked about in my home. But they realized at that time, wow, Christy doesn't struggle and she could be doing better. So my parents sat me down. They told me what grades were. They told me that my teacher said that I could be doing a lot better, even A's, if I put some effort into it. At that time, I just thought school was fun. I thought school was where you go, and I knew I was given grades, but I didn't know what they meant, and nor did I really care. Well, from that day forward, they motivated me with money. I know people are cringing, but my parents, honestly, I hope they're when they listen to this, they're not upset. But I went over this in my book. I already got permission.
That's right.
They gave me, yes, it's already there. They gave me money, and we did not have a lot of money. And it was a lot of money to me and a lot of money to them as well. I got $20. This is the 80s. $20 for every time I went up a letter grade. And if I maintained an A, I got $20. Well, that's like $100
Whoa,
every quarter.
Yes.
That is a lot.
Amazing. Yes.
But, and you know what? It worked because from that day forward, I basically was a straight A student. However, there were ramifications to that because what seeped in was an unhealthy perfectionism. And what I started to care about was only the grade. I learned very quickly how to become teacher's pet, how to work the system. In junior high, I even cheated to get the grades. So all of that. And as I progressed along in my education, to make a long story short, learning itself, the love of learning, the interest in subjects just for the sake of the curiosity aspect was non-existent for me. It was all about getting the grade so that I could get where I wanted to go in life, which was college and then graduate school to become a historian at the time.
You know, it's funny because I just sort of went down memory lane while I was reading your book because I had an older sister who was born with congenital heart disease. And so very bright, but she was very sick. She was one of the first kids in the world to have open heart surgery at Johns Hopkins when she was 12.
Wow.
And then it was life or death. And so I had a baby sister and then I was in the middle. So I learned pretty quick too, I needed to be independent. And my come to Jesus meeting about grades was in the fifth grade when I made six B's and two A's. And I looked at my mother and I said, what's up with this? And she said, well, you're just going to have to decide how important that is to you. And I decided, okay, this is really important to me. And this is never going to happen again. And grades become quite the taskmaster if you're geared that way.
Yes.
And so I really appreciated that part of your book so much, just talking about that whole need for your internal worth to be validated by your external performance, which, you know, you spend a lifetime outgrowing that. Thankfully, I've got a husband that is the opposite of that, and Jesus.
Yes. Yeah, it has been. And, you know, I call myself a recovering perfectionist, but it seeps in. And having my performance wrapped up in my self-worth is a constant struggle. But God is good, and He provides, and He humbles me and teaches me lessons when I need to. So He hasn't let me go so far. So
it's just interesting, your story, and I love it. Now tell me a little bit about the company that you and your husband founded.
Yes. So the company that we started was an educational center and consulting firm in Los Angeles. And we taught, instructed, and did remediations for the kids of the rich and famous. We also ran a homeschool out of our center during the day. Now, the homeschool that we did.
Okay.
But I don't emphasize it very much because utilitarian homeschool. We had child actors and child athletes, or kids who were between schools. Maybe they got expelled at this school and needed to be placed in another.
Gotcha. Okay.
We loved that. They're just misunderstood anyway. But so the homeschool that we ran was we hired credentialed teachers to run it. And we did the schooling around the kids' schedule. So we had a pre-pro surfer who was gone months on end. So we had to work around her schedule, things like that. It was for students who normally would just, because of their quote unquote careers, they would have truancy in any mm-hmm. typical school. So they needed mm-hmm. to be homeschooled. It was not philosophical in any way. It was, okay, yeah, we'll homeschool because we're working towards the career. Otherwise, you need to be in school where you can be socialized. That's where I was mentally and philosophically at the time. But as we started to run that center, we ran it for many, many years, 17 years, and taught preschool through college. We even helped kids at USC, UCLA. I started to look around and think to myself, man, these kids have everything. There is literally not a resource on this planet that they don't have access to if their parents so choose. Money was not a problem. So they mm-hmm. needed the mm-hmm. quarterback coach. They got it. They needed tutoring. They got it. SAT prep in the multiple figures. They got it, right? We even did college counseling. You can pay big bucks for that kind of stuff. Well, we started to look around and think, well, if these kids could afford anything, their parents, I should say, can afford anything, wouldn't you think the outcomes would be better? Wouldn't you think that psychologically and socially, these kids would be happier? I often equate it to those of us who are trying to lose weight. And we look at people that are like Oprah, for example, and you say, well, if I had a personal chef, I'd be skinny too, right? Like we often think if we had the resources to get our kids this tutoring and that tutoring, that everything would be fixed. Well, I was in the position to see firsthand when they do actually have all of those resources and things are not fixed. We saw broken families. We saw kids struggling mm-hmm. with anxiety and depression. We saw dangerous behaviors, failure to launch, just generally really unhappy families and frightening social behaviors, psychology, emotional anxiety problems, all of that. So when we had our first child, and I am an older mother, we had been running the center a while before my first child was born. When he was born, we were, of course, contemplating, well, what are we going to do for him? And that really got us thinking. And what I did is I booked a ticket to a homeschool convention because at the time I was like, well, we should start to grow our own homeschool because we have all these kids, we're doing really well. Let's grow this homeschool. And I thought a way to grow our homeschool at our center is to go to a convention and just see what's going on, make some connections. I don't know. So I went to my first homeschool convention and let me tell you, it was not what I expected. My mind was blown. Given I have been in education for a very long time, this was the first I had ever heard of different pedagogies, the first I had heard of a term called a living book, all of that. And I came home from that conference and I said, Scott, we're going to homeschool our kids. And so I started getting my hands on a lot of the homeschool intellectuals and writing and exposing myself to more podcasts and things like that. And the rest was history. But ultimately, when I went down that road, the big driving question I dared to ask myself, which was the beginning of the end, is I started to ask myself, what is an education? And when you honestly ask yourself that question, there is no way you can see that the schools are providing this for our kids. And people know it, but they don't know it. They know it in their heads, but not in their hearts.
Yes, that's right. And it really takes a lot of guts to say that out loud and admit it. Because the alternative, which is really homeschooling in most cases, can be really daunting or frightening if you've never considered it. Brian Ray, a dear friend of mine, wrote the introduction to your book, which is fabulous. You know you have a good book in your hands when you can't put down the introduction. So, so I'm reading the introduction, and he talked about your conversion, your educational conversion. And I know in the book you talk of it more as an awakening. So was that the moment then that you really began to look into homeschooling?
Yes, it was when I went to that conference with the intention of figuring out how to grow our own homeschool at our center, when I realized we're not really running a homeschool at our center. We're running a little mini school. And that I want something different for my family.
Mm-hmm. I love what you say in your book. I'm just going to read this because I think it's so key. My child's education is at the core of life, and I will give it all I can. And so, you know, that's where you come to when you're a parent. And I think probably most parents feel that way, whether their kids are in school or not in school. But homeschooling allows you an avenue to do that in a unique way. Joe and I were speaking at a conference in Russia, Christy. It was 2018, and it was sort of like they were in 1984 when Joe and I started homeschooling. The movements, or maybe a little beyond that, the movement was just beginning. I don't know what's happened in post-war Russia to that, but there was a Russian priest, an Orthodox priest, who stood up and said this. I'll never forget it. And it's been translated, so I'm trying to hang on to every word. And he talked about what happened to the family in Russia during the communist regime of Lenin and Stalin and, you know, just all, you know, recent Russian history. And he talked about the devastation of the family. And he said, I'm an old man. He was in his 80s then and has since gone to be with the Lord. And he said, I'm an old man, but I'm going to spend the rest of my years, the rest of my life, advocating for homeschooling. Because we need strong families to build a strong church and strong churches to build a strong culture and strong culture to rebuild Russia. And he saw the home and homeschooling as really being the pivotal point in that equation. It was one of the most moving experiences I've had since I started homeschooling. You know, as I read your book, my mind kept going back to hearing him and how crucial it is that we focus on the family and the home.
Yes. That reminds me of a friend several years back when I asked her once, why you homeschool? She said, because I can't undo what was done for 7 hours. And I knew what she meant. What she meant was, how can we hand our kids over to the government for 7 hours a day, 5 days a week, for 12 years straight, if not more, and expect to have our family values transferred to them? And I think one thing our culture has done to, in a very sinister way, to undermine homeschooling is to say that we're indoctrinating our kids.
Yes. And, yes. Yes.
And the truth is education is not possible without some level of indoctrination. So it's actually the wrong question. You cannot educate without a worldview.
And there's no neutral curriculum either. That's right.
Yeah, there is no neutral. So the question is not whether or not you're indoctrinating your children. The question is, who has the control?
You're right.
That is the more appropriate question. And when we ask ourselves that, we need to say, well, who should have the control? Because it should be parents.
Parents.
And yes, are there dishonorable ways to home educate your children? Of course. There is that indoctrination that is blind and not exposing your kids to alternate beliefs and all sorts of those things. But it's such a minority. I mean, if you look at just the classical movement in general, one of the pillars is logical thinking, which is the exact opposite of that. We want to train our kids how to think. And I would argue that the schools are, in fact, not teaching our kids how to think whatsoever.
And we'll talk about that in a minute. I really want to come back to that thought, because I love your section on history. But, you know, so I wrote down several of the quotes in your book that I just love. Christy, this is just a monumental book. And I think it's just
don't make me cry. It's been an emotional week because it launched last week. So yeah, it's very vulnerable having your book out there, because you've written many. So you know how I feel. It's my first book in the hands of Americans across the country. It's been nerve-wracking. Yeah.
Well, yeah. It is wonderful. I love that quote when you were talking about broken kids or broken families a little bit from Frederick Douglass. It's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. Yes. And I love that quote. And so the mother who said, I don't have time to undo 7 hours, you know, that's true. That's what she's saying.
Yeah. Nights and weekends that's temporary custody as far as I'm concerned.
So tell us, that's right. That's really an excellent point. I had to stop and let that turn my brain wheels just a little bit. So tell us what you think makes a great education.
Well, I think that ultimately, if I was to boil it down to encompass everybody, whether they are faith-based or not, I am a faith-based homeschooler, is I would say that it is the cultivation of a human being. That would be my answer. And when you ask yourself that, what does that mean? Then your priorities shift. You care less about making sure your child memorizes the periodic table, and you care more about how the siblings treat one another. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do know exactly what you mean. After having been involved so long in public education, running your own private educational business, tell me why you love homeschooling.
I love it for so many reasons, but one thing I absolutely love is the family connection and the family memories that we have together. Because one thing I realize when I look at society and how everything is age segregated, you can have siblings in the same family that completely live separate lives. Even the birthday parties they go to is only for the fifth graders, and the sports are age segregated, and you can have parents even living individual lives. One thing I love about homeschooling is that our family memories, when my kids are grown up and they look back on their childhood, they are going to have shared memories with all of us. Yes. And that means so much to me. I just want that warmth in my children's memories. And of course, I want individualized education and I want all of those things. But I would say that's primarily it. I love individualizing my kids' education. I love being a student of each of my kids. Mm-hmm. I like being able to make choices for them in particular. I love the fact that I have extroverts, I have introverts, and I can get their socialization just right for them. And it's different for each of my kids. And I love the time with them. I don't want to hand them off. And I could also say that I love not getting dressed until 10, 11 a.m. And we're just homeschooling in our pajamas, and we're watching all the kids in the neighborhood bundled up in their snow clothes walking to school. And we're sitting
out at the bus stop at 5:30 in the morning. Yes.
And we're sitting in front of the fire starting our morning time and reading and lighting a candle and playing some worship music. And so I love the culture of homeschooling. And Charlotte Mason says that education is an atmosphere, and we have control over what that atmosphere is for our families. And she was so right when she said that in the 1800s. And I think that is so special about what we can provide for our families.
Yes, I do too. It is, the time is such a gift with your kids. And I know, because I've got grown kids now and I have grandkids who are probably older than your children, 15, 16, 13, you know, and then I've got the littles, which I get to still watch grow up, which is great. And, but the time flies and you have those children for such a small amount of time. It seems like a really long time when they're little, but then when they leave, you think, boy, that flew by. I love the fact that you're a historian, Christy. So I want, for just a minute, I want to talk a little bit about the history of compulsory education. So you do such a great job of covering this in the book because you give a meaningful amount of education without inundating us. So just give us a little capsule, because it's like you say, we feel the weight and the mass of public education, and we feel like that has always how it's been done in this country.
Well, first off, I've read a lot of different people's histories of our compulsory education in America, and you're right, a lot of them are long and they're hard to get through. But also, something that I felt was that the way a lot of those are written, it alienates a large portion of our country because they are so charged with right-wing beliefs that no one who maybe is not so far to the right would pick up that book, and they would just discredit it immediately when there's actually really valid, important things every American in our country should understand about the compulsory school system. So I made sure to write it very factually and very carefully and not having a political charge either way, because I want a Republican to be able to open up this book and not be offended and throw it across the room. And I also want a Democrat to be able to open this book and not throw it at me. So
let me read this. This is so good. I love what you say. The moment has arrived to liberate ourselves from the confines of the past century and a half and from the prevailing belief that schools hold unquestionable authority over our children's education. Powerful, powerful.
Yeah. And we have negotiated that away over the last 150
years.
Yes,
we have. We've given it away.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know,
Americans fought the compulsory education system when it was first being introduced, and they lost. But basically, the history of compulsory education stems all the way back to Prussia, where the Prussians lost the war to Napoleon, and they were trying to figure out and scramble why they lost the war. And the powers that be at the time decided that it was because the soldiers acted too individual. They didn't act as a collective unit. And so as they were trying to solve that problem, they realized that they needed to start educating the children at a very young age with a lot more nationalism and controlling thought. Well, it was highly successful, so successful that it was adopted by other countries all across Europe. Keep in mind, at this time, the compulsory education was for the middle class and lower. The elite and the wealthy were still being educated privately in their own homes, primarily with tutors. So the compulsory education system was for the middle class and lower to basically become subservient to the leaders in those societies at the time. That was very attractive to a extremely famous leader that we know of today. His name is Adolf Hitler, and he adopted the compulsory education system in Germany. So when we fast forward what happened, that is the result. You often ask ourselves, how in the world did Nazi Germany get people to commit these atrocities? The answer is in their education, in what they believed.
It's so interesting that you brought up Prussia, because I will never forget reading, and you talk about John Taylor Gatto in your history section. So yes. I had the opportunity to interview him back in 2002.
And you're so lucky.
And spent a couple of hours with him. And you know, it's on one of those little digital recorders that had the little teeny cassette tape. And
yes.
I cannot find that little cassette tape anywhere.
No.
It has broken my heart. Thank you for feeling that pain with me.
But
he was the first one I ever read his book, The History of Underground Education in America. And he talked about Prussia, and I thought, how could such a small country affect us like that. So that is, to me, that is very interesting history. It also goes to the point that it doesn't take a huge amount of people to affect change either, which gives me great hope in a different sort of way, you know, for what homeschooling can do in our culture. One of the things I love about John Taylor Gatto, and I think you addressed this later in your book, I knew we were kindred spirits when you were quoting him. And I just remember him saying to him, we move kids bell to bell, cell to cell. And you mentioned that later in your book after the history section. And I think that's one of the things I love about homeschooling. You can start on a project and you keep going, and you're doing things that relate to real life. And and that was one of his big things too. One of the quotes he gave me in that interview with me, I had not read it in his book yet, where, you know, he said, I can't be part of an industry anymore that harms children. And I think, you know, he wasn't talking about teachers physically abusing children, but he could see the harm just that the system itself was doing. So that was, I would really encourage people to read that history section in your book. It's very freeing and liberating because you realize public education is the new kid on the block, not us. And we need that. It instills a little bit of confidence. And I think that's important. The other person, I think you quoted Alex Newman in your book. Did you quote him? He wrote, Oh, what was the name of his book?
Crimes of the Educators.
Yes. And so I interviewed him about his book. The big takeaway from that book for me was his whole section on phonics. And I was a great phonics believer. I grew up with phonics. Even though I learned to read with Dick and Jane, I had a teacher who taught me every nuance of phonics in the fifth grade. Yes. It changed my life. But I never thought of phonics as being so crucial, not only to the reading and the education of a child, but the whole entire welfare and well-being of the child. I'm going to leave that thought with you to unpack for us.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to the point of my history chapter. What I wanted people to take away from that chapter was the realization that way back when, a bunch of people didn't sit in a room and say, I don't think kids are being educated that well. What can we do to improve this system? And then they came up with the compulsory education system that is government sponsored. That is not how it happened. The intention of the Europeans who founded the system for their own countries and also ours, so we sent representatives to Europe to scout out and learn about this successful system that was happening across Europe, it was for the purpose of benefiting the state and the state only. And I try to tell this to parents over and over and over again, particularly with kids, if your kid has special needs. The system was never intended to give your kid an education. The system was started to benefit the country, the state. It was not for the purposes
to give workers that were not thinking it would be lockstep, just like the Industrial Revolution in Europe.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Exactly. And unfortunately, I could not avoid telling the history of the compulsory education system in America without mentioning the socialists. But I do so very carefully because one thing I have learned with history is we cannot look at history. People are extremely irresponsible when they tell history because they look through today's lens and they judge it.
Right.
So, for example, that happens with socialism. At the time, of course, we know socialism is a disaster and it is terrible and it is evil and it is humanistic and anti-God. We know that now. Back then, it was a new idea. It was everyone was a utopian, including Christians at that time. During the awakening movement, everyone was a utopian. Everyone wanted a perfect society. And socialism was a new idea at the time. And so did it have devastating effects? Absolutely. Look at history now. But at the time, we need to realize that people were trying to perfect society. So read that chapter. If you're listening to me and you're like, oh my goodness, this Christie girl is a nutcase, just read the chapter, because that it explains it in detail on how to properly look at people in our past, because we live in this cancel culture where we're now tearing down statues and things like that. And we need to take a second look. We need to take a second look at people throughout history and judge them more fairly. And I'm not a socialist. I hate socialism. But
I know what you're saying. I mean, we need to be able to look at it as much as we can logically and draw our conclusions and see what we can do as parents to take that ground back.
Yeah.
And if people in a positive way,
Yes. And the reality is the compulsory education system in America is fundamentally socialist. It actually is. No one will disagree with any historian who makes that statement. So that should beg the question, do I want to be a part of that?
Thanks for joining us for episode one in this two-part series. You can find Christie's book, Homeschool Rising, at Amazon.com, and you can find her at Christie-Faith.com. As always, you can find me at ZanTyler.com and on social media. Thanks so much for being with us today. I hope this has encouraged you. And until next time, bye.